This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 350 of Shutters Inc. podcast. This is Bruce Williams from shuttersincpodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender from creativephotoworkshops.com.au. Yes, wait your turn.
Episode what?
350!
The crowd's going wild, my friend, isn't it?
They've gone off.
More likely, it could be they're laughing at us. I tried finding
I
was looking for sounds from a funeral, but couldn't get anything.
How have you been?
You know, I've been well, thank you very much. I just came back from 3 days relaxing on the beach, so I've been... By relaxing, I mean I was visiting other people who could look after the children, whilst I could just watch them being looked after and mostly ignore them.
Right.
School holiday bliss. No, I've been well. Just got back yesterday, last night, from 3 lovely days away with the kiddos and had a lovely day. I even took some photos of them.
Yep.
Oh, boy, this is something different. I did something I haven't done in 20 years, Bruce.
Wow. Do tell.
I went away with only prime lenses.
Oh, right.
No zoom lenses.
You living on the edge rebel, you.
And here's the thing. Guess what I did?
Yeah.
I only use one of them like I almost always do.
Right.
Sometimes it doesn't matter what you take. You still never use the one thing you think you're going to use the most, and that was the case.
So what did you live in, the 85 1.4?
Well, 85 1.8.
1.8? Yeah. Was that it?
So I took away the 35, the 45, and the 85. I mean, to put in some serious love into both of them, but all three of them, but I failed miserably at that, yeah.
So it was the 85 you stayed on?
85, yeah. Mostly because I was just too lazy to take the bag. Someone was taking photos and the lens that was on it. And if I wanted anything wider, I used my iPhone. rather sad, but there was the way.
Oh, dear.
Well. Funny stuff. And have you been? As your bike gone, my friend? Is your bike fixed?
Oh, mate.
Should we not bring up such dirty subjects?
So they've torn the engine down. They've come up with a list of parts.
Of which only three of them they've got in stock.
I haven't even asked which parts have got in stock because I'm just assuming that none of them will be in the country.
Yeah.
I do know for a fact that they have got a cylinder head in the country, but the list of parts has been sent to the importer in Melbourne, who is basically the only person who can communicate with the factory in England. They sent that list off to England 48 hours ago. And I rang the importer yesterday to say, hey, did we hear back from England overnight?
Of course not.
Because they're, 10-hour time difference. So it's their daytime when we're sleeping. So he said, no, haven't. He said, but I did. Well, he had heard back from them, but it was a request for evidence.
To ask Bruce to stop bothering us.
For evidence of the service history, which I have done by the book. Like every service has been done. On time,
But they may not have seen that yet, so.
No, so the interesting thing is that all of the Triumph dealers have access to a network where they're supposed to put all the details of every service that they do on every Triumph motorcycle into the system. And the importer rang me and he said, mate, I can see the services that were done at Rick Andrews at West Gosford. He said, but there's only two of them. And I said, well, the others were done. They were done at Pro Cycles in Hornsby. I said, are none of those showing up in the system? And he said, no, they haven't entered any of them. So I said, well, look, thankfully I have kept all of the paperwork for every service that's been done. I said, it's all at home, but I'll scan it tonight and email it to you. So I did that, emailed it last night. And so today, that's been emailed off to England. And so hopefully by tomorrow there'll be a response saying,
nah.
Yeah, exactly.
And that we're not going to help you.
Yeah.
Oh, what a joyful time for you, my friend.
Oh, mate, it's driving me nuts. I mean, it means I'm on the train, which, has its upsides and its downsides. I mean, the upsides are, you know, you can have a sleep or read a book or do whatever you like. The downside is that my 65-minute commute is now a 1-hour, 45-minute commute in each direction. You know, so it's a, you know, almost an hour and a half out of my day, another hour and a quarter out of my day.
Yeah.
But anyway, it'll get there.
Not necessarily.
Well, that's true.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but not necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not anytime soon, anyway.
No, I'd be thinking, you know, minimum of another 2 weeks. So,
And then it said parts could be a real big issue.
Well, the importer in Melbourne said he's confident that once the factory says, yes, we'll do the parts as goodwill, that they'll get them in the country within 5 days because they'll expedite the shipping. Because of the bikes.
Oh, tell me you don't want it expedited. Tell me you want it in a hurry.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I can only hope that they come through tomorrow and say, yeah, it's all good, and they can order the parts and have them here by the end of next week. And then, you know, hopefully the bike's on the road by the middle of the week after that.
Mate, totally screwed. So you're a bit regretting buying that brand of bike.
Well, Kath is.
Yeah. Well, she said to listen to you. I don't blame her.
She's going, we've got to get rid of that bike. It's costing us too much. It's always off the road. It's always breaking down. Can't afford this.
She
did say something I didn't think I would hear her say.
Go out and buy a new bike.
She said, I don't care if you buy another one, but you've got to get rid of that one.
There you go. You can go shopping, my friend. Yeah. You have permission to spend.
Yeah.
Go for it. Look, yeah. Honey, I think you've made a wise choice. You know, obviously, I was a fool last time. I'll take your advice. I'll take your advice under advisement when I'm buying the next one. I'm off out now.
Yeah.
Oomph. Stay away from Triumph. Simple as that. Or you come home with it. Oh, I bought another Triumph, honey. Oh, that'll go down well.
Yes, anyway.
Joyous, joyous, joyous.
Yeah, all right. So, look, by now you're probably thinking you've tuned into the This Week in Motorcycling podcast, so we should probably talk some photography stuff, but let's shake it up a bit. Let's go to David Marlin's book review right now. Take it away, David.
Now, Bruce, do you want to be more erudite than your friends? Do you want to win at photography trivia nights? Or maybe photography pub quizzes? Do you want a book that shows your intelligence with it just sitting on your coffee table? Or do you simply need something to stand on to get the Vegemite off the top shelf? Then don't look any further than A World History of Photography by Naomi Rosenblum. This 700-page heavyweight covers the history of photography from its earliest beginning to its present day. It's a sort of a book you can read end to end like a textbook. You can dip into it and look at the different themes, or you can simply look at the pictures. The text is quite unlike a lot of textbooks. It's pretty readable. The flyleaf blurb describes the book as this sumptuously illustrated volume hailed as an indispensable work on the subject, which is pretty interesting lead, but they really go to town in the next bit. A World History of Photography encompasses the entire range of the medium, from the camera lucida to the latest computer technology, and from Europe and the Americas to Africa and the Far East. The book investigates all aspects of photography, aesthetic, documentary, commercial and technical, while placing photography in its historical context. Indeed, among the more than 800 photographs by men and women are both little-known and celebrated masterpieces arranged in a stimulating juxtapositions that illustrate or illuminate their visual power. You know, stimulating juxtapositions. Amazing. But it's actually largely right, despite it being a lot of hype. Even looking through it, there are some remarkable photographs that you've perhaps never seen before from particularly the 19th century. I'm still in awe of a double fold-out, which is a double-sized A3, which is Edward Maybridge's Panorama of San Francisco. It was done in 1878, and it is absolutely crystal clear and crisp. It's remarkable. It makes you really think about your own photography. It shows you how photography has developed. It shows you how early photographers struggled to get a place for the medium and different ways they tried that, and a whole lot of different styles. It's an interesting read, a good book, and something just to leaf through. You can get the book through Amazon or the Book Depository. You can get it in a softback or a hardback, but because it's so big, it's probably better as a hardback. Amazon have it for about $48 US, and the Book Depository has it for about $80 Australian. Now, make sure you get the fourth edition. There are earlier editions. Now, just as a little bit of a tip, when I go looking for books online, I first see if I can get it from an Australian outlet. I try and support our local industry. Or, secondly, I try and find the original publisher and see if I can get it direct. I then look for it on Amazon or the Book Depository. Now, the thing about Amazon to watch out is that it quotes in dollars US and they add the shipping costs right at the very, very end. You get a shock sometimes when you convert because the shipping costs can sometimes be as much as the book. The Book Depository, on the other hand, is UK-based and they're actually aware that Australia exists and quote in dollars Australian delivered. So when you're comparing prices between outlets, keep an eye on that. So have a look at a world history of photography, and maybe that might stimulate your juxtaposition.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that, David. That's great that they actually have Australian pricing on Book Depository. That's really cool, because I don't think, certainly Amazon doesn't. Anyway, all right, so we should get on with some photography chit-chat. What do you got for us, Glenn?
So just before we go on, because we've got to talk about our Lexar promotion from last week.
Yes.
We got a few folk. We got nine only people.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put it open again this week as well for people who haven't yet necessarily caught up.
Yep.
I'm still going to keep it on. And for those people who put their name through, give me a couple of days. I've just got to wait to get the kids out of school holidays because I have no time to sit at my computer and get. Because the way they've done it, I've got to go onto the website and copy and paste the link to the download, then go into an Excel sheet and copy the code that they get, and then send it to each person.
And it's got to be a different code for each person.
Because it's a genuine product. It's not just just a little tricky, but bear with me and you will all have it very soon.
Fantastic.
But thank you. So these people are saying awesome stuff about us, dude. They're saying we're the best podcast to listen to.
You know, it kind of occurred to me afterward that shouldn't you have maybe made whatever it was that they had to post contain some reference to the supplier of said product that you're giving away?
No, because it's all about us.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, in hindsight, you make a valid point. But you know what they say about hindsight? All you have to do is look at asses. So let's just not worry about that. Now, come on. Oh, Lexar memory cards are the best memory cards I've used since the last memory cards I've used. Yeah, it doesn't have to say.
Somehow I don't think they'd be overly thrilled with that sort of endorsement.
See what I mean? Sometimes it's just safer to take the mickey out of us.
Fair enough. Point taken.
Oh, dear. So, what have we got on our list of stuff to talk about this week? Anything?
Well, I've got nothing. Heaps.
Just go now. We've hit the highlights. It's all Daniel from here.
Okay, so I've been trawling Facebook this week, and Lee DePros and Adam included this in, Lee DePros just simply posted it to his Facebook wall. Adam posted it to the Shutters Inc.
Wall,
yeah. This was on Petapixel. Fujifilm announces its medium format mirrorless 51 megapixel GFX50S.
Easy for you to say.
Yes. What I thought was interesting about this is that it is actually... It sort of warrants the medium format moniker in the sense that the sensor is 1.7 times the size of a 35mm sensor. So although it's 51 megapixels, and we're not hung up on the megapixel thing, but being a bigger sensor means that those photo sites can be further apart, which in theory will mean really good, you know, noise or, you know, lack thereof.
Should.
From this sensor, yeah.
I'm excited. I've already put an order into Fuji to say I want one for free.
Yeah, of course you have.
Now, say I want to get it. But when,
if you were
when
a real mate, you would have asked for two.
But I'm not a real mate.
Obviously.
I put a request in for a loaner when they're available in the market to try and do some because everyone's going to get their start shooting landscapes. So I'm going to do some nice portraits with it.
Yeah, nice.
Because I genuinely like this product.
Yeah, right. As in, you like Fuji or you like the look of this particular product?
This is something that I've been wanting to explore for a while, is a good medium format-ish body in a 35mm-ish size.
Right.
Because if you look at its physical dimensions, they aren't that much bigger than, say, it's probably actually smaller than an EOS 1DX or a Nikon D5.
Yeah.
So that's what it fits in the hand, but with that high, with the ability to handle that higher resolution as we're talking about.
Yep.
And so it's just something I'm keen to have a play with and just sort of put it through its paces and see what it's like.
Yeah, I was also interested to see in the blog post on Petapixel that they mentioned that it's more than just one aspect ratio you can shoot in. You can shoot 4:3, 3:2, 1:1, which that's unusual. I've not seen any other digital cameras that will shoot a square image. 4:5, 6:7, and 6:17. So yeah, really interesting looking product.
I'm loving it.
Go Fuji.
Well, they do keep innovating, don't they?
Yeah.
And as we know, their lenses are awesome. I mean, if the user experience, as far as it, the way it's ergonomics, the way it handles the menu systems, the clutter of the crap that's in to put around stuff on cameras these days.
Yep.
If all that stuff's not too bad, I think it'll be a fabulous piece of kit.
Yeah, definitely.
You'll be able to lug this thing around without needing an awful lot of extra space. So
yeah,
'twill be interesting.
Absolutely. The next thing that I found was posted on Facebook by William Long. And this was a story that said even Ansel Adams had a blind spot. And this was figuratively speaking.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it was all to do with this type of photography that sort of blossomed in the late 1800s and then kind of fizzled out by the 1920s called pictorialism. And what it was photographers, and obviously this was very early days of photography, experimenting with different techniques of development and adding textures. This was like analog Photoshop.
Yeah.
And apparently in those very early days, there were already photography Nazis going, no, that's just not cricket. That's not photography. You're manipulating the image. And there was a school known as the F64 school of people or crowd of people who were very much in that vein. Exactly. And for some reason, Ansel Adams was following along with this F64 crowd. And so although he dabbled in this pictorialism style for a while, he went, no, the F64 crowd have got it right. We should be only, you know, capturing light and leaving it at that. And so he turned his focus, quote unquote, no pun intended, to landscape work and left the whole pictorialism thing behind. But this is a really interesting story about what these early innovators were doing with printing onto paper and then rubbing charcoal on the backside of the paper to darken the highlights that had been exposed and radical things like this and then rescanning it and ending up with a neg and then scanning it again and to get it back into a positive. And in the process of these three, you know, different scan passes, introducing the textures of the paper and all this kind of stuff. It was a really interesting read.
Sounds it.
And I'd never heard of this pictorialism as a style. Had you?
I can't recall. It does. It's something numbingly rings a bell in the background. But
yeah, right.
You know, lots of things ring bells in my background, so it's probably not a
Like, doesn't if you scroll halfway down, there's an image by William Mortensen called Maid Pouring Milk.
Yeah,
and
another one.
And it looks like
she's pouring chocolate milk, by the looks of
it. It looks like a Rembrandt kind of
what's his name? The Dutch guy.
The other guy.
The Dutch guy.
I don't know.
It'll come back to
me. Who was the Dutch guy? Anyway.
The Dutch one.
Right. I thought Rembrandt was Dutch, but I don't know.
The other, this is bringing things up.
Don't you hate that?
And there's the guy that did the documentary we talked about in the episode last year, searching for In the Steps of, right. Who's recreating all this. It doesn't matter.
Okay. It'll come Vermeer. Back to you. It'll come
they
back to you.
They did as soon as I gave up Vermeer.
Oh, right. Okay. Cool.
So it's Vermeer-esque.
Yeah. Yeah. So very interesting, a very interesting read. I highly recommend it for anyone that's interested. Next thing I had was that there was an update to Lightroom this week. does that not interest you?
Oh, go on.
Well, what I thought was interesting about this particular update was that there is the ability now to use smart previews for your developing, even if the high-res RAW files are on your system. So obviously, as camera sensors get bigger and bigger, the files that are being generated get bigger and bigger, and that starts to cause, you know, a bit of a headache for any computer that's not a top-of-the-line, highly spec'd, you know, number-crunching beast with, you know, gigs and gigs and gigs of RAM. So the beauty of being able to use smart previews instead is that they are like a low-res proxy of the high-res RAW file.
Yeah.
Gives you all the information that you need in order to do your edits and to finesse the image to the way you want it to look, but it's not actually requiring processing, you know, these 50, 60, 80 megabyte files in the background with every little mouse click that you make because it's working on a low-res proxy instead. So I thought, yeah, that's worth a mention because more and more of us are going to run into this at some point where, you know, our systems start to get a little bit long in the tooth and can't handle the kind of processing that's required because of the massive file sizes in question. So I thought it was worth a mention.
Right, let's get on the two things we both want to talk about. Yeah. Your one, then my one.
Okay.
Your Sony.
That my link will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to check it out.
My one, the photos David Kembry sent through with the heading Photos to Tear Apart.
Okay, do that.
So you got your favourite one first?
No, you do. We'll do the David Kembry photos.
Do you want to tear some photos apart first?
Well, I don't need to because I know you will.
It's my job. Yeah. Okay, let's pull them up. Yeah. Let's have a look.
I've got the first one.
What's the first one? Okay.
Well, the first one's two whales in the middle, in midair.
Yep.
Now, my immediate thing here is, David, they're underexposed.
They are underexposed.
Now, I don't know if that's the way you shot it or if it's the way you post-processed it.
It could just be the way that the file came through the mail.
No.
It may have rubbed on some charcoal on the way through and made the highlights darker.
It could have been that, yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know.
There's lots of things I like about the image.
Right.
I like the cloud.
Yeah.
Its shape, and they seem to be sort of leaping towards it, and they're heading the direction the clouds go. My brain tells me the cloud's going to the right, and they're heading towards the right. And
yep.
I like their body shapes. I like the way they're frozen in the water. I like the fact that one's upside down on one side. It's a lovely capture, except it's just under.
Yeah. Yeah?
It's just flat and lifeless. So whether it needs increase the exposure in post.
Yep.
Then add a bit of contrast curve to give a bit more kick.
Yep. If this was captured as a RAW, it is absolutely salvageable. If it was captured as a JPEG,
it's still salvageable.
Yeah.
But you might not be able to pull the details out of the shadow there, but you probably don't need to.
Yeah.
I don't know how much detail. I don't think you need them lit up make them look like they're fully lit.
No, you don't.
To make the photo interesting. You just need the whites to be whiter.
Yep.
Just the overall thing to have a bit more punch.
Yep.
And I said, lighten, contrast, lovely.
Yep, absolutely.
So, but other than that, nice shot.
Yep.
What a wonderful moment to capture. Now, this girl looks familiar. This shoot looks familiar. Does this look like one of your shoots?
This was shot in my garage.
Yes, sir. Now, if I remember correctly, I picked the crap out of you for overexposing your face.
Yeah, you did.
So is he. Doesn't he learn? I told you off for doing it. Well, so she's washed out.
Well, we both shot on the same day, so how was he going to have taken your critique of my work and made any impact on his?
If you listen to the podcast, I would have picked... He would have shown this one. And what was the background you were using, by the way?
That is my white backdrop, believe it or not.
So you see, they added a texture to it.
No, it's probably just underexposed.
No, it's too mottled to be underexposed. It's too uneven to be underexposed.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was my white backdrop. But anyway, I don't know. Well,
to me, that looks a bit too mottled. It could be, but it looks a bit too mottled. Look, other than the fact this is a little bit overexposed, I like the composition.
Yeah,
you've got to take that highlight down off the top of the hat, off the top forward brim of the hat. It just draws the eye too much.
Yep,
it's the largest expanse of brightness in the photo compared to the top of her forehead.
Yep,
but it really is a pull for the eye.
Right.
So that needs to be, if nothing else, it's taking down. That needs pulling back. And just take some of the heat off the forehead.
Yep.
Her actual cheeks aren't too bad. The problem is it's a really, really hard, really specular, really punchy light.
Yep.
And the pose is soft.
Right.
And the feel and the mood is soft. So the light's incongruent to the pose.
Right.
Yeah, you've got to stop everything soft, yet the light's hard.
Okay, you know what I mean? how do you get softer light?
Put it through a bigger light source, create a bigger light source.
Right.
So what was that shot through?
60 centimeter softbox.
One of my favourite things to use is my sort of, I think it's about a 6 foot by 4 foot or 5 foot by 4 foot. I don't know what it is. Folding backdrop, but it's a scrim, not a backdrop.
Right.
So it's just translucent material.
Right.
So I love to fire a flash at this 6 foot piece of folding material.
Yep.
And it lights up like a big 6 foot softbox.
Right.
And it
and
is the soft.
How do you suspend that?
I get someone to hold it.
Size fabric. Right, okay.
No, it's like a folding backdrop. So it's got it's a collapsible backdrop.
Oh, okay,
so
yeah,
it's got its own rigid frame, which is good.
Yeah, so I've got one of those that's 120 long and 60 wide. It would be twice the size of my softbox.
Exactly. How far away was this out of frame, do you recall?
I reckon maybe 3 to 4 feet from her.
Okay, so it's too far away. If you want soft, it's got to be close.
Does it?
Okay. The closer, the better. The further away, the harder the light is.
Right.
The closer the light source is, the softer it is.
Oh, okay.
Backwards of think about the sun. Yeah, the sun's 93 million miles away. All the light's really punchy.
Yeah, right.
When it's cloudy, light source is 20 kilometers away. Everything's soft.
Yeah, right.
So you have to think about it that way.
It's a good
when your light's close. Yeah, when your light's close, it's soft.
Yep.
When it's far away, it's punchy.
Right.
So you need to get it as close. So basically, you want it 1 millimeter outside the edge of the frame.
Right.
At all times, yep. Regardless of whether that frame has 5 foot of space in it or 5 inches of space.
Yeah, right.
As close as you possibly can. So get it as close as you can, as big as you can.
Yep.
So your 60 centimeter softbox, imagine that almost imagine that 5 feet away from you.
Yeah.
And look how big it looks.
Yeah.
And then imagine it 2 feet away from you and look how big it looks.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It's going to have a lot more impact. So even your 60 centimetre closer would have been better and certainly a lot softer and not as specular as it is.
Yeah, right.
So just make it bigger.
Okay.
But look, I've got to say, textures, tones, love it all. It's good. No problem at all. Its composition's great. There's no wasted space.
Yep.
Yeah, no, sorry, but nothing wrong with that.
Cool.
Next one down.
Yep.
Boring as batshit.
Yep.
Is that a technical term? No.
Great clouds again.
Oh, yeah, good clouds,
but needs more contrast.
It just needs something else. Have something maybe in the foreground or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
Just something to give it to. It's a very three dimensional shot.
Yeah,
to my eye, it needs something in the foreground to give it that feel of depth. So even if you shot a little bit lower, so some of that green sort of little
tufty grass stuff. Was up close.
It was just filling the frame a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the scene here. This is the first time I've actually really looked at it. If you could have come further around to the right, towards the beach a bit more, you could maybe have used the height of those dunes a little bit more interestingly, and therefore you'd be able to use the leading lines of the waves a little bit more interestingly.
Oh, yeah.
So you've had the dunes going off to the left and the waves and the arc of the beach going off to the right. You've got some lines to work with for depth straight away.
Yeah, right.
So lines, depth, once again, it's the type of light. It's very low contrast light, as was the whale shot.
Yep.
But therefore, it means you've got to do something to put some of that contrast back into it. It needs a bit more punch.
Yep.
I mean, it's not a bad image. It's a nice picture.
Yeah.
But we want great photos, not nice pictures, if we possibly can.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
And the last one of the whale.
Better exposure.
So, yeah, the exposure's certainly better. It's just, I don't know, to me now it looks like it's dead and floating on.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so we've got this beautiful detail on it now, which is fabulous. Yeah. It's all this stuff going on under it, through its gills. Yep. So it's interesting. I just don't know if it makes an interesting photograph.
I think because there isn't the water splash that there is in the first one, it sort of lacks that animation, like something actually happening.
Some splash, but it's not caught in a way that's really noticeable.
Yeah.
But also, even if there was, the angles, because it's so close to the water,
yep,
it doesn't look like it's leaping up. It looks like it's laying down, which is a very different feel, an emotive feel altogether. But I mean, as far as a subject goes, it's a fascinating subject.
Yeah.
But we always know a fascinating subject doesn't make a good photograph.
Absolutely.
The light on a fascinating subject and what that fascinating subject is doing and how we frame it is what makes it a good photograph.
Yeah.
And once again, what a fabulous moment to be in. Hey?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you've got to be rather pleased with that. But
yeah. Anyway.
But thanks for being brave enough to send him in, Dave.
Absolutely. Thank you, David.
I hope he didn't go too hard on you. I think there was reason.
No.
There was reasonable.
So obviously the big news, certainly in my world this week, was the announcement by Sony at Photokina in Germany of finally a successor to the A99, which is now, what, a four-year-old camera? Yeah. So speculation has been rife for months and months and months that Sony was going to just let A-mount completely die and never say anything about it, and it would just disappear. And then probably a month ago, rumors started to circulate that, no, there was an A-mount successor coming. And sure enough, they announced it this week. And it's a monster of a camera. And I've got to say, if I could justify the money, I would probably do it.
Roughly how much is it, do you reckon?
I think it's going to be around about the same as the 5D Mark IV.
So about $5,000.
They're saying 3,200 American body only when it ships in November.
46, 47.
Yep.
So it's really simple, my friend.
Yep.
Add it to the price of the bike. When you tell the missus. Yeah. Just build it into the price.
That's right.
It's so simple when you think about it. You've already got permission to spend. That's spend it. A bit more. She's all going to squeeze in.
So
tell me, what's so good about it?
So same sensor as the A7 R2. So it's a 42 megapixel, 35 mil sensor.
Right.
5-axis image stabilization built into the body, which is pretty good.
So the 5th axis is to be able to go back in time and hold the camera against video?
Yeah, that's right.
Wouldn't we all love that one? Or to focus it better? We'd all love that one.
if I understand it correctly, the autofocus is very similar to that which was featured in the Nikon D5. So the Nikon D5 has this interesting 3D tracking focus ability. And if I understand it correctly, what they're talking about in this A99 Mark II is a very similar kind of thing, where it has on-sensor phase detection autofocus, but it also has a secondary dedicated phase detection autofocus chip that the light passes through before it hits the sensor. So you've got these two levels of phase detect autofocus that, like I said, if I understand it correctly, just basically means that it's really awesome at 3D tracking of fast-moving objects.
It's real awesome-like.
Real awesome, right? What else was there? 399 autofocus points across the plane. 4K.
The plane?
Yeah, the plane. 4K video in camera, like straight to the internal card. You don't need an external capture device to capture the 4K video.
Do any of them need that? Do they need that in other cameras, do they?
Well, when the very first A7S came out, which was the first of Sony's cameras to do 4K video capture, it couldn't do it internally. You had to feed it out to something like a... Oh, what were those? Oh, I can't think of the name of the box now, but there was a third-party capture device that you basically had to go and buy, and it could stream the 4K out to that box and capture it in that, but it couldn't capture it internally. And then when the A7S Mark II came out, it was the first to be able to capture the 4K video in the camera, you know, straight to the card.
Yeah.
Obviously, all of these cameras, you know, in order to capture 4K video content direct to a card, you're going to have the highest class of, you know, card available today, you know, because the amount of data that you're trying to stream and crunch is just ridiculous.
And as a, on a side note, SanDisk just showed it to Photokina, the 1 terabyte SD card.
I saw that.
So it's like... There's the answer for your video buff, yeah.
Well, it comes down to the speed that it can write at.
Of course.
It's not just about size. But, I mean, yes, obviously size is great if you are
shooting video. Size is always important, dude.
Yeah, but it's of no value to you if the card's not fast enough to actually capture.
So what you're saying is it's not the size, it's what you do with it.
It's something like that. So anyway, yeah, so there's a... I'm sure there were other points to the A99 Mark II that were great, but I don't have the...
The only picture I've seen of it has this cracking-looking lens on the front of it. Any idea what that lens is?
No, I don't. It's a Zeiss lens, I know that.
It's a sexy-looking thing. It's a sexy big chunk of glass, I'll tell you that much.
No, I don't know what lens they've taken the promo photos with.
It was a sexy-looking piece of glass, I know that much. If any of the listeners actually bothered to actually do any of the research that we should do, and know where that lens is, let us know.
Yeah. Fabulous. And the other thing that I liked about it too was the fact maximum ISO of 102,400. And that's in extended mode, which means that the usable limit's going to be, you know, 50-something thousand, which is still, you know, a good 4 or 5 stops beyond what I can do with my A850. So
this is a nice jump.
I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
It's I've really got to say, I'm pleased to see Sony revitalizing that line, because I think it's something they should have put a bit, because of their ability, their technological ability, I'd love to have seen what they could have done with that format of body more.
In what sense?
Well, just that Sony had just some, I just think they could have explored that style of camera further and brought a lot more as they are now, but they sort of went to the smaller body, and now they're sort of retrograding that technology backwards to the larger size body. I would have liked to have seen maybe, you know, a couple of years ago they started integrating that sort of technology straight away into a 35mm, you know, bigger size body.
Right.
I think they would have captured a larger portion of the photographer market.
Yeah.
Who don't want to use a smaller body, but who love the series of, I mean, the lenses, these Carl Zeiss lenses are astounding.
Yeah.
Yeah, who want to maybe take advantage of that system or marry up a smaller A7 with a bigger A99 II. You know what I mean? The leaving one part of the equation unfinished maybe lost them some customers.
Look, I can
I would have thought.
I kind of see, you know, that they've gone with the whole mirrorless thing, and in the process of doing that, they've seen fit to introduce the E-mount, which was a whole new lens mount, and that's given them a heck of a lot of profit potential, because it's meant they've been able to ship hundreds of thousands of new lenses that if they had stuck with a simply an A-mount line
stuck,
of...
But at least kept them viable, because it's been dead in the water for a few years.
What, A-mount?
Yeah.
My point is that by going to E-mount, they were able to sell a hell of a lot of lenses that they wouldn't have been able to sell if they just kept making A-mount bodies.
That's what I'm saying, not just keep making.
Oh,
both things. I'm saying keep both relevant and viable.
So do both, but be more active in the A-mount is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, actually have something viable in the A-mount, not died in the water a couple of years ago. So for a couple of years, Sony had, I reckon they probably sold one A-mount camera in 2 years worldwide.
One?
Well, who else is buying them?
One?
Who would buy them? Yeah.
There's a lot of dedicated fans out there.
Yeah, but it's a 4-year-old camera that talked nothing about for 2 years.
For sure. For sure.
And so why would you rush out and buy it? You'd be sitting there, oh, it's been 2 years, it's been 3 years, there's got to be a new one. So no one's buying the damn thing. So they killed their A-line model range effectively for years.
Yeah. Look, I'm
and
sure
now that now will... they have to reawaken it.
Look, I'm sure there'll be a lot of diehard users who've already got either an A99V or something earlier that's A-mount who will be more than happy to upgrade to the A99 Mark II. So I'm sure they're going to shift some units, but how dedicated they are to A-mount, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think they would have sold a lot more units over the last couple of years if they had something that was viable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they wouldn't.
Hang on. What do you mean by was viable? Like, what was not viable about the A99?
Well, who's going to be buying it? It's 2 years old.
Yeah, but it wasn't 2 years old when it came out.
I didn't say it wasn't viable when it came out. It's been out how many years?
Four. Three.
Right. So in the first year and a half, it's viable. It's a sellable product.
Right.
But after that, it dies. Okay? Unless you're a Canon 5D Mark III, which sells for 4 years,
yep.
Or you're even Nikon's models don't sell. The D700 survived three and a half years or whatever it was.
Yep.
But Sony and the other brands don't have that pull for that length of time. People aren't going to sit on that model, especially when you see a company putting all their effort and all their money and all their releases in something completely different.
Yeah.
The whole new lens mount. It's like if Canon came out with a whole new lens mount system,
yep.
And didn't upgrade their Canon 5 series for 4 years,
yeah.
People would stop buying the 5 series very quickly because all of a sudden nothing's been developed in there. There's no new lenses. There's no new announcements. There's no new anything.
Yep.
Everything's going to this new system. Well, shit, maybe I should move out of that new system. And they lose, or maybe, oh, actually I've been thinking about Nikon for a while, and maybe I'll look what Nikon's got.
Yeah.
They've got people, you know, rats jumping off the ship left, right, and center. Sony will have had that for years. Because for years, there's been no one saying, hey, we still care about you.
Yeah.
Hey, you're still important to us. This market's important to us. This type of customer's important to us. Your lenses that you have and the system you've built into is important to us. And we're supporting that by keeping the product viable and keeping the product active. It wasn't an active product anymore.
Yeah. I think they converted a lot of people, though, to the E-mount system.
Then why bother coming out with an A-mount?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. They're either both should have stayed viable all the time.
Mm.
It's like all of a sudden a car company going to nothing but electric cars for four years, and then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, we'll start bringing out petrol ones again. It's just, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, I remember that old thing sitting in the back of the garage. Just pull one of those out again. Yeah. I don't know. To me, it seemed to me like it was a big lost opportunity for Sony in an era when they were still finding their feet and trying to make prove to the world that they were serious about staying in the business.
Well, maybe that was what dictated the E-mount push, was that they saw Canon and Nikon both struggling, you know, to make profit, and they thought, well, you know, maybe smaller, lighter cameras that are still capable of pro level results is a better way to go. I don't know. I'm only second.
I don't think any of these companies have thought about profit in the last 25 years. I think there may be PROPHET.
Yeah.
They're trying to prophesize what's coming next, but they don't give a rat's patootie about making a dollar by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very strange. Anyway, enough of that.
So the next one, and this will be the last Sony story, was that Sony and Profoto have announced a collaboration with the Air Remote TTLS integrated camera and flash system. This is due to ship early next year for around about €310. And essentially it is an on-camera receiver transmitter that goes to a remote head that'll allow you to control, how many was it? There was 3 groups and something like 40 different remote flash units, and you could assign them to 3 groups and control the group power and all that stuff. I mean, it's, you know, nothing earth-shattering. I mean, there have been other things from Elancrom and the likes that have done similar things, but this is a Sony Profoto collaboration, and we'll do high-speed sync and all the sort of stuff you'd expect.
Nice.
Yes. All right, what have we got next? David Kembry, we've done. Luke Gemmell. Now, Luke Gemmell is a guy that I used to work with or he used to work with me at the Australian Radio Network. He's moved on to other things. And he sent me an email yesterday. I won't read the whole thing out, but basically he has taken on a role as marketing manager for Isuzu Team D-Max here in Australia, who go around putting on demonstration shows, a little bit of stunt driving and all sorts of fun stuff like that. And he reached out to me and said, I'm looking for some photographers to get involved with us at our various events. He's got some stuff happening in Victoria and something happening in South Australia over the next month or so. And
he's targeting the right person with you.
Yeah.
He's a half decent amateur photographer. It's like,
you're a nasty man.
Thanks, mate.
As is so often the case, he doesn't have a budget. He's offering, you know, exposure. And I did write back to him and I said, look, mate, I'll be honest, you might cop a little bit of flack because photographers of the world over are getting sick of being offered nothing more than exposure in return for their time and their talent and their equipment. So I said, look, I'll give it a shout out and I will put Luke's details in the show notes. So if the idea of going and, you know, being, I don't know, a volunteer photographer, if you like, but getting to shoot some fun action car stuff appeals to you, then by all means hit Luke up and let him know where you are and, you know, find out.
Yeah. Where so we've got a short time frame in this because he wants exactly. The next one's 14, 15th of October. So
yeah, which is only a couple of weeks away. So
it's down in Geelong in Melbourne, in Victoria. So yeah,
I said I'd give it a shout out, and you know he did come back to me and he said, well, I'll buy him lunch, and if I did ask me, look, if I wanted to, you know, buy a portfolio of images from them, what would it be worth? And I said, look, you know, how long's a piece of string? You know, it
comes half decent amateurs.
Exactly, it comes down to the quality of the images, comes down to how badly you want their images and how badly they want to be involved in your project. You know, and you sort it out. You're back and forth, and you negotiate a price. So, Luke's a great guy, and I, you know, if anyone's interested in it, please hit him up and go and have some fun because it does sound like it'd be fun to do. So
I'm sure it would be.
Yeah.
I might, for my own funsies, volunteer to do the Friday one.
Oh, really?
Hey.
Luke, get on that, because he's a good photographer. Sorry, I'll have to cut that out of the podcast. Yeah. All right, so a couple of stories from Adam this week. The first one was Canon's new 70-300mm Mark II zoom lens is its first with an LCD info display.
Woohoo!
Tell me, Glenn.
So I saw this the other week and I just didn't bother mentioning it.
Why do we need an LCD display on a lens?
Because we're idiots.
Right. Is this doing the job of the old aperture ring? Is that what it's doing? Or
It's possibly going to be programmable, but I'm sure it's going to be showing us how many feet or how many meters the lens is focused on.
Can you program it to take better photos?
No, that's the camera you program to take better photos. Put on program.
Ah, excellent. Photos. Excellent.
Learn these things, dude. Half decent amateurs. Hold on.
So it didn't appeal to you then?
I saw it the other week and I thought, what a crock. And just didn't even bother mentioning it.
So you think it's just marketing guff?
Well, what else use would it be, you know? You're going to sit there and maybe if you're calculating your hyperfocal distance, why you do that with the 75 to 300, I've got no idea. You're calculating your hyperfocal, you want to dial up the exact bloody, I don't know. You'll be able to see what stabilizer mode you're on maybe, and it's all just joke. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Hey, I was right. If you scroll down far enough, you can put it into aperture ring mode.
There you go. The space shows a distance scale with depth of field markers. Yeah. Wow.
Revolutionary.
What the physical windows and Canon lenses already show. There we go.
The second one.
If you do press the mode button, it will show you the exact focal length you're on in digital form rather than just, you know, pressing the button, you'll know that.
Rather than looking at the markings on the case.
That you're somewhere between 70 and 100, it'll show you that you're some. Now, if they actually said 87 millimetres, I'll go, okay, well, if you need to be precise, it's telling you. But it all does is mirror the thing that's less than 2 centimeters above it. What a crock. Oh, dear.
So Adam's other story is, this is what the Nikon D810 looks like after Burning Man. And this is a photo of a D810 body. And get this, this was leased. This wasn't owned by the guy shooting it. He hired the camera to take it out to Burning Man from Lens Rentals. And it's come back absolutely covered in dust.
You hose it down. That's what your high pressure hoses are for, isn't it?
High pressure. Yeah, nice.
Oh, it's waterproof.
To a limit. Yeah, I'm wondering whether he got his bond back.
Well, so interesting when they look at when they've taken the top off and looked inside. It does doesn't have an awful lot of stuff. It's got bits in it, but not.
It's not too bad. It's done a pretty good job of keeping the majority of it out.
Yeah, considering the conditions.
Yeah, totally. Dang. Darren Purbrick, who is going to be assisting me with the wedding shoot in a couple of weeks' time for Jaden and Beck out at Orange, wrote to me on Facebook wrote to me last week, and I forgot to include this last week. He said, "Hey, Bruce, hope all is well. Looking forward to the wedding in Orange. I have a few questions for you and other members of your show that I'd like to hear views on, if any. I'm more commercial portrait shooter and retoucher, and just lately been looking at refining my workflow, make more money, but try and claw back some personal time, as I seem to be, well, I feel like I'm running 24/7 these past few months. I'm not complaining, but I don't seem to find the time to do the paperwork, and we've got to keep the old tax man happy. So, number one, what invoicing and paperwork apps/companies do you use, and what experiences have you had with them, and how easy are they to use and integrate into? And two, do you outsource your editing? If so, who do you use, and what results have you had?" So in terms of accounting, I was using a product called Cash Manager from New Zealand, which was recommended to me by my accountant, but I've just closed my company down just in the last few days, actually. Simply because I wasn't doing anything with it. But Cash Manager I found really easy, and it did very comprehensive reporting of, you know, all your expenses and all your incomes, and you could assign all the relevant categories and whatever, and it'd format everything the way you wanted it to. It'd calculate your BAS, whether you're doing it quarterly or yearly, and make it very
easy. Can I make a recommendation?
Yep.
Find a good tax man.
Yep.
To do your BAS for you.
Right.
Ask him what program he wants you to use.
Yep.
Use that one.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
That's one way of going.
This is what I do with my guy.
Yep.
I use the program he tells me to.
Right.
My wife enters all the information in. But here's the thing. At the end of the day, I hit save. It goes to a Dropbox.
Yep.
He opens up the Dropbox folder. He opens up his computer, imports into his, goes bang, 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 shoots back out the finished BAS, $44, thanks.
Right.
You know, it's just, I don't have to go visit him. I don't spend time to go see the tax man. Bang. Super simple. Find a tax man. Use the simple program that he wants you to use that enables you not to have to go to the office four times a year. Take up his time. Take up your time.
Well,
I
didn't visit my accountant anyway. I was doing my BAS for myself.
But how long was that taking you?
Because I was really slack, I would basically accumulate all of my, you know, receipts and whatever for the whole of the quarter. Yeah. And at the end of the quarter, I'd just sit down one night, and it'd probably take me an hour and a half to go through, enter all the information, generate the quarterly BAS report, then log into the, you know, the tax portal on the ato.gov.au, enter the digital version of the BAS through the tax office website and submit it, and that was it.
Yeah.
So I was using this Accomplish Cash Manager was the name of the product, if you're interested, Darren, at the recommendation of my accountant. And I used that for, I don't know, 6-7 years, I guess. And then about 12 months ago, he turns around and says to me, "You know, you're the only client I've got who's still using Cash Manager." And I went, "Well, what would you prefer I was using?" And he said, "Oh, well, these days," he said, "we're using Banklink from MYOB."
Yeah. So the MYOB stuff's pretty good.
Which immediately sent a shiver down my spine because every person I've ever spoken to said MYOB is just a dog of a program to understand. So I reluctantly allowed him to move me out of Cash Manager and into this other thing called Banklink, which was just a nightmare. I hated every minute of it. At least Cash Manager, I understood it and I could enter all the data myself. This Banklink thing, you have what was a transfer file that you would process at your end, but then you would have to check it out of the system and email it to your accountant, and then they would do stuff at their end by checking it into their system, and then they'd have to check it out to send it back to you. So only one of you could be working on it at any one time, which was just a nightmare. I hated it. Glad to see the end of it. So if anyone tries to tell you, yeah, go MYOB Banklink, don't have a bar of it. It is awful.
Or ask them to teach you how to use it.
Oh, look, they tried. They tried, believe me.
A lot of the MYOB stuff is pretty simple. I don't know how long ago that was, but it's pretty simple as well, though.
It's the last 12 months.
Yeah, who knows?
I thought it was horrible. Look, I'm sure it's like anything. If you use it every single day.
Oh, of course. And you but if you're using it once every 3 months.
That's it. That's exactly
a nightmare.
It.
Yeah.
So,
but I would seriously just find a tax agent.
Yep.
Use the software they recommend because they know what you don't want to start using a program that they don't understand that doesn't link with their systems so on.
No, because that will just end up costing you more in accounting fees.
So exactly. So what you want is that's one way of cutting down a lot of time and money. And secondly, he's asking about outsource editing your images.
Yeah, which I've never done. I've always processed my own.
I'll tell him to go look at a company called shoot.edit.com, and the dot is actually spelt D-O-T.
Right.
So shoot.edit.com.
Right.
Go and look through their stuff, look at their pricing. There's a bunch of companies out there that do it. Not saying they're better or worse than anybody else, but they are incredibly reliable. They're well-priced.
I'm not sure if Darren's asking because he wants to outsource his editing or if he's looking for work as an outsourced editor.
No.
I'm not sure.
He can find his way, but if he's too busy,
yeah.
Outsourcing your editing is by far the best possible thing you can do.
Right.
If you're a commercial portrait shooter and you're spending all your time retouching, then you're not making any money.
Yeah.
You don't make money retouching, you make money shooting.
Yep.
So stop retouching, start shooting more.
I will say, Darren, if you are looking to outsource, I'm sure you've already found some places to find third-party retouchers. But two things that do come to mind are Model Mayhem. There's a whole bunch of retouchers on there. I'm always getting friend requests from these retouchers from, Czechoslovakia or somewhere. They just obviously just trawl around on Model Mayhem looking for photographers that they can spam. And the other one is these websites that are for outsourcing, freelancing, so places like Odesk and Fiverr. Both of those, you would find there would be retouchers lurking around on there looking for work if that's the case, that you are looking to outsource your retouching work. So I'll put links in the show notes to all that stuff anyway. So
cool.
All right, Mike Holman this week on, in the last 24 hours, I guess, on Facebook, put up a link to a bunch of photos that were taken by a commercial airline pilot of storms from the cockpit of the plane whilst in flight.
Stop taking photos, take your hand on the wheel. Especially in a storm.
Yeah. But there's some pretty awesome looking images in there.
You know what this guy's doing?
What?
He's going, hang on a second, there's a big storm out there about 30 miles off the left. This is lean our way over there a bit.
Yeah.
Just a bit closer. Yeah, I know it's off the flight path, but it'd be a better photo if we get closer to it.
That's right.
We fly through that big cloud. All that turbulence just as you're nodding off to sleep. It's this guy's fault.
Well, you've got to give him credit for not using the zoom lens. He's actually getting closer. That's what we always say.
They are some great shots. They really are.
So thank you for that, Mike. I know you didn't plan on that being used on Shutters Inc., but I saw that and liked the images and thought it was worth a mention. Steve Peters wrote, okay,
We're going to get attacked for the
next couple of weeks. Going to take Glyn to task over his recent comments over the pricing of the Canon 5D Mark IV.
Sorry, mate. What was that? It was getting late at night.
Recommended retail in Australia is $5,699. Deducting GST, this is $5,180.91, which is about US $3,886.26. B&H are selling the Mark IV for $3,499, which in Australian dollars is $4,664. After adding GST, this gives a total price $5,131.08. And this is not taking into account any freight, insurance, and that you have no Australian warranty and need an adapter for the battery charger. Currently, I've found two Australian retailers who have the Mark IV at $4,988. So Australian retailers are very competitive in their pricing. To demonstrate this further, I look at Canon's other cameras here in Australia and compared to B&H. There's too many numbers here for me to read it all out because it'll just put everybody to sleep. I will paste the text of Steve's message into the show notes. Glyn, your response.
Oh, whatever. It's still too expensive.
Oh, look, I don't disagree with that. I think all these bodies are...
But if it's true, I mean, I'm sure when I looked at the pricing the other week, there was a bigger disparity than that. But regardless, it's a ridiculous price for the camera.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy.
Good on you, Steve. Thanks for doing the work, dude.
Carl sent me the video that I mentioned earlier in the podcast. This was a field test of the Nikon D5. That was quite an interesting video to watch. They went out and shot some motorbike dirt track stuff in the desert, some guys kayaking down through rapids, and just, you know, seeing this 3D autofocus motion tracking was just phenomenal stuff. Like, it just seemed to do a pretty awesome job. No matter how little time the camera had to lock onto a subject, it was just amazing. And they did some stuff where they had two guys, one close to the camera and one further away from the camera, who were doing like a mock fight thing. And you could see as the guy in front moved across the plane of focus, how the camera would instantly focus to him. And the minute he moved out to the side of the frame, it would then focus on the guy further back. Yeah, it was an interesting video. So thank you, Carl. He also wrote, "Hi guys, just a heads up. I find your appraisals are not consistent. Take, for instance, the..." Ooh.
Hang on. If he's looking for consistency, he's on the wrong podcast for starters.
"The oohs and ahs for Tamron's lodged patent for a 115mm f1.4 lens. Now, if I remember, I mentioned Nikon's 105mm 1.4 some episodes back, and the fanfare was like, yeah, not that much into bokeh," or words to that effect. "Well, at least you can walk into a shop right now and purchase it. It's not just on the drawing board. Anyway, I have my grumpy old man rant for the day. Keep the pods coming. Cheers, Carl."
Now, I've got a response to that one.
Yeah, it was 10mm shorter.
There's an extremely simple reason why the 115 Tamron gives an ooh and an ah, and the Nikon gets a yeah, whatever.
It's the extra 10 mil.
No.
What?
I'm a bloody Tamron ambassador. Well, got her.
Of that, of course.
Even if it's the worst piece of crap on the planet. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Oh, my Lord. Oh, go you, good thing. No, the 105 1.4 Nikon's lovely, but yeah.
But he shoots Canon. He doesn't care.
I don't know the price of the damn thing. Half the price. And it's got an image stabilizer.
And the final thing from me, David Marlin sent me a video which was posted on Facebook. And this was a shoot. I haven't had a chance to see all of this because he only sent me the link like 2 minutes before we started recording. And it was a photo shoot where they did body paint on their real human models, but made it look as if the photographs were actually paintings. I think we've seen similar things in the past, but the brief glimpse that I had of this video looked really awesome. So,
that was good. I saw that a couple of weeks ago. It was
cool.
Yeah, I mean, the shading, because it's a different type of the type of painting is more obviously more painterly rather than trying to make it realistic or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But so the type of shading painting work is excellent. It's really, really cool.
So that link will be in the show notes for anyone who wants to check that out as well. All right, mate, what do you got on your list?
bugger all, thankfully, because we've been going forever now already, it seems like. Oh, four people.
We can keep going. It's fine.
These four people. They're going to be ringing up saying, excuse me, can you shorten the length of it, please? I was looking through the list of products released at Photokina to see if anything interesting stood out.
Right.
And I came across a KISS 3D photo booth.
Right.
So you can go in, and it's KISS, K-I-S, is a French company. Right. And it's just a photo booth that you go in and it 3D scans you, and then obviously the 3D printer prints out a 3D version of you.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. So when trying to locate that product by following the links on the Photokina site, I couldn't find the damn thing. I got to the KISS site, couldn't find it anywhere. So I did a Google search, and I came across another company that announced one in 2014.
Right.
So far early. It's not saying it's any better or worse. But what I did like about this new one, this one from 2014, I should say, is that if you own an Xbox One with one of its little Kinect cameras, you can do the scanning at home. And if you own a 3D printer, you can use their app to do the printing. Or you can send it to them and they'll print it and then send it back to you. So you don't even have to leave the house.
Wow.
That was kind of cool. Using your Xbox to scan you to produce 3D versions of yourself. That was pretty darn nifty.
Because that's what the world needs. We don't have enough two-dimensional selfies. We now need three-dimensional selfies.
Absolutely.
Dear
old. Hey, I thought it was kind of cool. So, once again, in the product list of stuff, lighting kits for drones.
What?
So you can add lights. Loom Cube have announced for the DJI Phantom things, these new LED lights for drones. So you can mount it. So you can now light up stuff at night with your drone. And so the headline is Loom Cube adds headlights to the DJI Phantom. And you can now light stuff up.
They would need to be seriously powerful LEDs because unless you're going to fly the drone right into somebody's face.
Well, they've got 2 1.5-inch cubes.
Yes.
And they're 0 to 1,500 lumens.
That's not much.
Lot, is it?
1,500 lumens is not much.
Yeah.
That's a couple of candles worth. Anyway.
Is it? But still, yeah. Anyway, if you want to light a couple of candles, these are your tools right here.
There you go.
But see, speaking of,
because obviously weight is going to be an issue, but you can't have lights that are too heavy because the drone has to be able to lift them.
Exactly. Now the thing that excited me the most was finally GoPro have announced and released their drone.
Oh, okay.
Because GoPro has been in a lot of trouble business-wise. They're losing money hand over fist this last sort of 12 months.
Oh, okay.
Because the amount of other people taking over doing the same sort of products and their volumes are shifting, their margins aren't what they were and all that sort of stuff. So there's a fair amount of pressure.
And everybody that wants a GoPro has already got one.
Yeah, so there's a fair amount of pressure. And but the link I've sent you is the wrong link, so it's not going to help you be able to show it. Yeah, what I love about this thing, it's a complete kit. It's a complete system. So obviously a normal action camera.
Yeah.
It's got a little handheld stabilized gimbal.
Is this the Hero 5? Around.
The Hero 5, yeah. You can walk around with this little gimbal, and then this gimbal attaches into the drone, and the drone flies, obviously this thing around. It just looks like an amazing complete kit if you're into that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd love to try it out. I think it'll be a serious amount of fun. It just looks to be the most complete drone kit I've seen so far. For someone who's interested in the end result as opposed to just the fun of flying a drone.
Yeah, right.
So the link I've just sent you through there is expensive and underwhelming. But I like it. Watch the video on it. I reckon it seems like a really cool little piece of kit.
Right.
And something I would very much like to get my hands on and have a play with.
Excellent.
So that was it for me. I only had a few things because you said you had lots and you did.
I
went
did.
Forever.
I did.
Went on and on and on.
Well, make
look
a change.
Look at my Sony this. Look at my Sony that. Sony. But, yeah. So what's up for the rest of the week? Anything exciting?
No, I've got one more day of work. This weekend, Kath and I are going to Sydney on Saturday. We're childless for the next 8 days. Because Max goes away tomorrow night for the what they call AFX, the Army Field Exercise, which is once a year. They go away for 8 days. They go out to the Army base at Singleton and they do a week of living in the bush and you know, mock manoeuvres and all that sort of stuff. So Saturday, Kath and I are going down to Sydney, catching up with some good friends of ours, going out for dinner and then back to their place, probably drink a little bit too much wine, crash the night, come home Sunday.
Lovely.
And then do it all again next week.
Oh, I've just got daddy daycare duties for this. Oh, sorry, parenting. For the rest of the week. I've got a workshop on Saturday, as usual, but yep. The rest of it, it's all hanging out with the kids, which is just awesome. So,
right.
Not much exciting in the way of photography coming up, but okay. lots of cool stuff.
So what workshop have you got?
Oh, it's just a how to use your camera, so don't have to think.
Yep. Marvelous. Nice. Excellent. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Yeah, I will, and you too. And remember, Lexar promotion.
Yep.
Shutters Inc. podcast is the best podcast I've listened to since the last podcast I listened to.
That's right. Post that comment on the Facebook wall or in the comments on the show notes if you want to. If you're not on Facebook, that's fine. You can do it at the comments at shuttersincpodcast.com. And Glenn will give you something worth $35.
Yeah.
What is it?
I'll give you the download code for the Lexar rescue software, software rescue number five.
Finally.
Number five.
God,
number
like five. Which pulling is, teeth.
Lexar. Yeah, they got their money's worth. And it's awesome stuff. So for free. And for those who've already done it, I'll get it to you as soon as I can.
Beautiful. All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShuttersIncPodcast.com.